Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, a book that shares a look at universal energy, healing, spiritual communication, offering ways to awaken to your true human and divine potential. I am most delighted to welcome Shavasti, author of Embracing the Power of Truth, a candid and personal account to offer readers a doorway into the simple, powerful truths that may have eluded them in the course of their busy physical daily life experiences. Hello, Shavasti, and thank you for joining me.
Hello, greetings. Thank you very much indeed for inviting me.
Shavasti, as listeners of Healing From Within know, my guests and I attempt to explore our inner soul life, as well as the outer world and universe, in the hopes of remembering our true nature as both spiritual and physical beings, and to learn how it is possible to allow, accept, and surrender to the most challenging situations in our emotional, spiritual, and physical realities as we move to higher states of consciousness. We seek love and an improved personal state of well-being, knowing that the infinite path to health and prosperity is definitely within our reach. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Shavasti will take us on an intimate journey as he discovers all the pitfalls, illusions, and delusions we can easily become trapped in on a journey of spiritual and personal development. Shavasti is a healer and spiritual teacher, and his work spans many disciplines, including energy medicine, shamanism, and shatsang. For a decade, he has been considered as an authority in the field of family constellations and ancestral healing. He has authored 4 books under the name of John L. Payne. Shavasti, I always like to ask my guests to think back to early childhood, and if any experience, interest, or personal value stands out in their mind, as it seems to me, we are part of the sum total of our experiences, whether in this life or before, and our life plan or destiny is often present very early on.
When I was a young child, there were several different religious influences in my life. So, although raised a Catholic, my father was Anglican, and my mother's Catholic family were also split. Some cousins were Jewish, and other cousins were Catholic, depending on which branch of the family they were in. And because I lived in the Far East as a young child, I was also surrounded by Muslims and Buddhists and people of other faiths all the time. And so I really began to question the nature of God and how it could be wrong to go to a building, whether it's a synagogue or a mosque or a Catholic church or an Anglican church, and pray to that same God and yet have that God angry with you because you were in the wrong building. That never made sense to me. So that was one part of growing up, being surrounded by people of different cultures, different languages, and different religions, because I lived in Malaysia and Singapore when I was a child, and also, too, because of the variety within my own family as well.
I think that was a great gift, and it was also very definitive that you were going to have a spiritual path, and you needed all those influences. Now, my beginning was similar when I went to temple. And it wasn't very often because I didn't come from a very religious family. I felt that there was something that the adults, I was a child, but I sat there with a smile on my face and saying, this doesn't feel right. There is something missing from this equation of rote structure. I think I always loved God or the universe or life, but I didn't feel that it was appreciated in these restrictive religious concepts. So I think we had a similar purpose in our beginning to realize and recognize. Later on, I studied philosophy and I studied religion and I studied education, and I was seeking, as were you, the truth of who we are and how life could be so full of joy and happiness, even though there were so many challenges in the physical world. So let's fast forward now. Your book starts with an armed robbery. How did that change your life? And were you able to forgive the gunman?
Tremendously. It was a left turn or a right turn. It was a very sharp turn in my life. There was a moment of, and there's always a moment of denial in the middle of these things, as the gunman entered my living room and I was standing facing them. I tried to convince myself that somehow they had turned up at the wrong address, that they were looking for somebody else. I wasn't able to think, well, how did they get in the door, etc.
That was a good thought that you had. Maybe they didn't belong and they would just go away. That was great, positive thinking.
So, well, it's really denial, not really positive thinking at all. It's just shock, complete shock. This is really happening. It takes a while when something really drastic happens like that. It could be the death of somebody or an accident that we've had or some other traumatic event. It takes a while for our consciousness to be able to accept, oh, this is the actual reality of what's happening. So the thing that changed me was that this ordeal lasted for an hour, hour and a half, during which I was hog-tied, blindfolded, and had a gun held to my head for most of it. And during the ordeal, one of the gunmen kept on repeating, "I'm going to kill you now. We will kill you before we leave. You are going to die. I'm going to kill you." And there was this moment when I heard him remove the safety catch on the gun, and it was held to my head, and he said, "I'm going to kill you now." And what went through my mind in that moment was, will this hurt? I hope it's going to be quick. I was really praying that they wouldn't shoot me in the torso and I would have a bullet in my liver or kidney or in my lungs, and it would take me minutes to die in pain and all that fear. I really wished that it would be instant. But in that moment when he said, "I am going to kill you now," and I fully expected it, I heard a voice, a deep masculine voice, which doesn't make me assume that it was the voice of God, because I no longer have those images of God as being masculine or feminine. So whether that was my higher self or a spirit guide or an angel or God, it's rather irrelevant to me. But a higher power spoke to me and said, "Do you want to live?" And you know, there was a pause. My answer was not an instant yes. I was 45 at the time. I'm now 53, about to turn 54. And there was part of me, because single, I don't have children, I've been working, been self-employed for a long time. Part of me was tired. And in that moment, I experienced everything that I had experienced in life and every emotion and every feeling. So this major detailed flashback in milliseconds was that of every moment of my life leading up until that point. And I still didn't quite know the answer. And then, from within me, this deep, deep, unbridled longing came up. And it was around things that I still wanted to do. And I knew that inside me, that I had made an agreement that I did not want to leave until I absolutely knew what love is. And that I relate back to my very early childhood experience of being 10 or 11 years old and looking up at a statue of Jesus with that red heart and radiating light and the Sacred Heart. And that's what I wanted to become. That was my childhood image of that. And so I connected to that point of the deep longing of wanting to know what is love. And so this yearning for an awakened heart.
And I think that voice wanted to hear exactly that. because now you were really put on the path that you had been born to aspire to and strive towards, but perhaps in daily life had forgotten. Now, Shavasti, you wrote this: what has emerged is a greater awareness of this event and my heart and the ability to much more clearly see and feel energies, and also the ability to speak to those who have crossed over working as a medium for some of my clients. I am no longer reluctant to show my so-called psychic abilities, nor feel the need to defend them. Paranormal was normal, and normal was strange and foreign. And you know, Shavasti, many people, when they have a near-death experience, come back with spiritual gifts that they may have had before but were not in tune with, and then they are. You often speak of hidden loyalties. Can you tell us more about that and what it really means?
Hidden loyalties are really about the bonds of family, and the bonds of family go beyond our siblings, parents, and grandparents. They can actually stretch for many generations. And so through these bonds of family and the hidden loyalties, we can be loyal to certain prejudices, we can be loyal to certain belief systems and ideas, we can also be loyal to hatreds. And so that's pretty obvious when we look at the world. We know that in certain areas, people are raised to dislike those other people over there. So we're raised to either dislike people of a different race or a different creed, different religion, different ethnicity, or a different political grouping, or from a different country. That's quite common, and we see that throughout the world. However, there's another aspect of this loyalty as well, and it's about giving ourselves permission and also having the courage to be happier than our own parents and grandparents. And so I've often come across, let's say, if there's an individual whose brother or sister is disabled, or let's say their brother or sister died at a very young age, actually giving themselves the freedom to live more fully. This also applies when we are the descendant of a group of people who have been victims. So, for example, there are many Armenians here in the United States. So Armenians survived genocide, just as Jews survived the pogroms and also the Holocaust, just as African Americans were brought here against their own will with African American slavery. And so when we are the descendants of a group of people that have suffered greatly, perhaps we've even got Native American blood, how is it then for us to be able to look at our ancestors and say, please bless me if I have the courage to thrive. Please bless me if I have the courage to be happier than you, given all that they have experienced.
Thank you very much for saying that, because yes, each of us is a wounded citizen of the past and of these hurts that lie in our DNA and our cellular structure, and it is very important that we find as much joy and love within ourselves, regardless of these experiences that others that we loved and what part of us suffered before. So thank you very much for so beautifully expressing that truth. Now let's go on to something about your travels and studies in places like China. And
yes,
it did help to reawaken the magic of your psychic ability as a child, and to start to see into the world of subtle, very, yet very present energies with this longing for the divine, which I, as an intuitive healer and a medium, have also spent many years to awaken or to be able to talk about what was always there but was not accepted by my family and my societal patterns and the work I did and the places I went. So I think you experienced a lot of that yourself. So tell us something about China, just something about China. I find it so fascinating. You wrote so beautifully about it.
Well, first of all, entering China was entering a whole different world. So China's been a closed culture, a closed society for about 5,000 years. So it's one of the oldest cultures on the planet. And therefore, entering China, I began to realize within a couple of weeks of being there that my thinking and my ideas and my belief systems were more entrenched in Western Christian thinking or Western Judeo-Christian thinking than I had previously imagined. Had you asked me the question before I went to China, I would have said absolutely not. My thinking is not entrenched in Christian ideology at all. But I realized that it was. And I only realized that with the comparison of a culture that thinks in a completely different way. So I sat back again and asked myself, well, what is the truth? What is the truth beyond everything that I believe?
So it took you to a higher level of digging deep within yourself to find the truth that took you away from some of the belief systems to a higher connection to this universal spirit of oneness, unity, perhaps. So that was beautiful for you. That place opened that possibility up. Had you not gone there, perhaps it would have taken longer. Now, why do you think it might be so hard for many of us to forgive and let go of the past? And it is. So why do you think that?
Well, again, it comes down to belief systems. We live in a very punitive culture. Western culture is quite punitive. The culture here in the United States is particularly punitive, probably more so amongst its neighbors, you know, such as Western Europe or Canada, Australia, etc., other Western cultures. So there is a belief system that the bad need to be punished. And we divide the world into good people and bad people, and we have lots of ideas about what's good and what's bad. And that's one aspect to it. But the other aspect is that we have a tendency to hold on to this notion that it should never have happened. And so if something happens, let's say my armed robbery, if I get entrenched in it should never have happened, then I simply do not accept that it did happen.
I see.
So that's the first movement that must take place, the acceptance that it actually happened, because we cannot heal what should not have happened. We can only heal what did happen. So that's the first step. And essentially it comes down to, do we want peace or do we want to be right about something?
Right. Do we want to move forward and be in this moment, or do we want to be in the past, restricted and stuck? Absolutely right. And you wrote this, Shavasti. It might be hard for us to forgive and give up the past because this shatters our illusion that we are in control of our choices and relationship and forgets about our childhoods where we experienced living in truth until this experience was seen to be unwelcomed and unwanted by the adults around us. And this triggered a great hurt that we internalized and hide. And this memory of this great pain is locked deep in our core, and we are afraid of losing relationships and love. Our patterns and behaviors are so deeply embedded at the heart and cellular level that our body and, of course, our ego or mind, the place of illusion and fear, find it hard to let go of what it sees as the only way to survive emotionally and in our relationships. So again, it's the past patterns of childhood and perhaps even before this life that we are seeking to release so we can be in the truth of who we are. We really want to remember who we are, not just as the body, but much more than that. So we're healing the psyche, the mind, and the spirit. Now, you speak about truth liberating us. What do we want to be liberated from? And do you think most people are truthful or wish to be more truthful and authentic? And what might be holding them back? I think they want to be, but I think there's a lot holding them back. You tell the story of an angel, that a large angelic being in China, and that how this came to help you in terms of understanding good and bad.
There are many deep questions within that. Many people are looking for a pain-free existence. And what I've discovered is that a pain-free existence is not there to be had, but we can have a suffering-free existence. So back to forgiveness, it often doesn't work because it's the good trying to forgive the bad, and there already we have some equality. And so when we're equal to something and we're able to stand into the truth of what actually happened, and then we're able to see the other, be that the perpetrator or the victim, in a whole new light. And so the pursuit of wealth is much more popular than the pursuit of truth, and yet in my experience, within truth there's a lot more wealth there to be gained. And many spiritual seekers end up chasing images of what it is to be good and what it is to be spiritual, rather than facing the truth of themselves. And what is really hidden, especially within Western culture, underneath all of these layers of ideas of good and bad, are feelings of worthlessness, self-hatred, rejection, not enoughness, nothingness, and loneliness. Within Western culture, there is an awful lot of loneliness.
And now we're going to get to a reason why there's so much of it. You make some strong statements in your book about Christianity, or it could be any of the other religions, as a more reflective view or realistic light. You put it in a more reflective or realistic light. And then later in the book, you clearly express a love for Christ, or perhaps the Christ consciousness. Can you tell us something about that? Because this is the root for thousands of years that has separated man from their true connection to who they are as divine beings, spiritual beings having a physical life and connected always to that divine energy of creation. So could you tell us something about that? Because I think that'll make it pretty clear.
I was quite deliberate when I wrote my book to place in there what to some people might seem like a contradiction. So on the one hand, I'm making some very strong critical statements of Christianity and its teachings, and then a chapter or two later, I'm talking about my deep love of Christ. Myself, I have had direct experience of what could be called Jesus the man, but also the energy of the Christ. So I don't see them as being separate, because it already depends on how one views the story that's being told. As a metaphor, as an absolute metaphor, the crucifixion is one of the most powerful stories that I know. Just absolutely wonderful. The complete surrender of the self-importance of the ego to the divine. And there is that point of separation where we realize our own separation from the divine, and Christ said that so perfectly on the cross, "Father, Father, why hast thou forsaken me?" And I have personally experienced that deep place of separation from my own divine nature. And that is where our original wound sits. That's where our deepest wound sits. And that wound may be there because of feelings of rejection or worthlessness, and other feelings that keep us separate from who we are. Because we begin to learn, we learn at a very young age to keep our light hidden. Because it's often intolerable for the adults around us that children live in such uncomplicated truth. Children state what is, and adults have learned to avoid what is and to tell a story about what is. And one of my realizations was that, wow, these people actually believe what they're thinking.
Well, they believe what they've also been told, and some of
exactly.
The truth has also been let out. Now, you wrote, much of Christianity in its current and historical form is very Paulist in nature. He was not one of the original 12 apostles and was converted from Judaism to Christianity 70 years after the reported, approximately 70 years after the reported death of Paul's, of Christ. Paul, for whatever reason, could not embrace the simple teachings of Jesus, which are identical in places to the teachings of Buddha and Krishna. In effect, what he did, Paul, was to establish a more Levitical view of the world. God to be obeyed and feared, and rules based on the teachings of hellfire, purgatory, and being born to sin. And it seems to many on a spiritual quest that this has held us back from knowing we are not born to suffer. Suffering is a choice, just like joy and love and growth is a choice. And when we can let go of some of these thoughts, we will be more compassionate, and we will live in a world that is more in oneness and unity. So I love the way you wrote that. It made it very clear to me, and I'm sure to others, that some of the stories are not exactly as they were written. And what you said about Christ on the cross being a metaphorical view about the ego and physical life and spiritual life is exactly so. You know, in my view as a medium, I connect as much as possible to higher energy. And I know that God is around and within us and wishes us to know we are never alone or separate from His love. And I think that is part of your intention also. What does it mean to have an awakened heart?
It really means having an undefended heart. An awakened heart is an undefended heart.
Open, right? Open.
Open and undefended, and I really do mean undefended, because most of us walk around with a defended heart. We say on the one hand that we want love. There's often the expectation that there's a person out there who is going to give us that love that we need. So many of us did not get enough. We simply didn't get enough from our parents, and because our parents did not get enough from their parents, and so on and so forth, because of the many generations of trauma.
That have been passed down. Absolutely.
We've had hundreds and thousands of years worth of wars and terrible traumas that have affected us. And each of those traumas has made individuals withdraw, and that limits their ability to truly bond with what Hamid Almas calls merging love between parent and child. And so because we were so open as young children, our original wounding causes us to defend the wound, and the wound could be that of abandonment, rejection, a feeling that we're wrong or ugly, etc. And so we're wanting to connect to another, but really our great difficulty is to fall into love. It's quite easy for some people to fall in love, but I'm talking about falling into love, to be vulnerable, to be undefended.
I like that word, undefended. And I think we can start to experience what Jesus, Buddha, and Krishna all have said. And you wrote this in the book. When you're undefended and your heart is open, the kingdom of God is within. That was said by Jesus. You will find the Lord dwelling in your own heart. That was said by Krishna. And the way is not in the sky. The way is in the heart, by Buddha. So as each level and layer becomes revealed, we can begin to experience the voice of the heart as wisdom and an expression of love and beauty. So I thank you very much for putting that in your book and expressing the truth of the simplicity that we were born with and lost for a while, and some of us are very grateful to be rediscovering this truth. And I want to thank you, Shivasti, for joining me on Healing From Within and sharing your descriptive, intuitive glimpses of the eternal and showing how to align to the truth of what many enlightened spiritual teachers, avatars, and healers know already. As we explore human consciousness and the layers of karma and our subconscious defenses of the mind, we can release them to once again reveal the true nature of our heart-based soul presence. For more information and to purchase this journey of awakening, please go to shivasti.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, I have been pleased to share what Shivasti discovered and his wise words written with such clarity, eloquence, truth, and loving attention that resonate within my own heart as I also search for the truth of higher spiritual values, which first called to me in childhood and which then were released, and which took me nearly a lifetime to finally hear and then commit to. My own path of soul development, like Shavasti, was recognized by moving out of the constraints of a world which still follows ancient but not truly authentic forms of societal patterns. And when we broaden our minds, open our hearts, and allow ourselves to breathe in the eternal source of freedom from redundant fears, we can find joy. As Shavasti wrote, most of us enter the world of healing, meditation, yoga, new thinking, and spirituality because we want to either feel better about ourselves or to improve our experience of reality. Some of us have a burning desire to know the truth of who we are, or even the truth of humanity, our origins, our purpose, the reason for our existence. However, very few of us consciously want to know the absolute truth, for truth always brings transformation and demands. We relinquish control of our relationships and other people, and that we relinquish control in the full knowledge that we had none in the first place. However, when we value truth over and above our fearful attachments, truth then becomes our refuge, comforter, and the doorway into that which we have long been in search of, freedom and peace. Shavasti and I encourage you to simply allow yourself to trust your inner intuition and to begin to listen to the voice of your heart as it tells you. You have been given everything you need within to awaken and to follow your path and destiny. Be courageous, be truthful, and know that all is as it should be in order to help you remember your true nature, our original essence, the core of love and spirit. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to my website, CherylGlick.com, to learn about your own life journey and to listen to leaders in the metaphysical fields talk about the seen and unseen forces of life as they offer ways to improve personal development for success and well-being. Shows may also be heard on DreamVision7Radio.com and WebTalkRadio.net. Thank you.